I want to welcome James McKenney. Welcome back, James.
Thank you, James.
I think I just called you.
A lot going on.
I think I just called you a horse, but you know what I mean.
It's best to get it from the horse's mouth. Yes.
So we got the
We got a bunch of
comets, asteroids, all kinds of stuff going on out there.
There's four comets that are now visible with either modest equipment like binoculars or to the naked eye, and they're all in the early morning sky. Additionally, this was just announced, discovered in September by accident by the Hubble Space Telescope. I'll start with this asteroid discovered by the Hubble Space Telescope in September, but only announced just like 2 days ago, which is kind of weird. But this asteroid developed six tails, and it looks just like your standard comet. Well, not so standard because it has six tails, but many times comets have multiple tails for various reasons. But oddly enough, in the announcement, they said that this is a... They've been studying this asteroid. It's a hot asteroid. And I think they said like 170 degrees Fahrenheit. I think I saw that in a quote. But don't quote me on that. I believe that was about this asteroid. Anyway, it's too hot to have water on it. If you had a stove surface at 170 degrees on Earth, in Earth's atmosphere, and you put some water on it, it would evaporate very quickly. That's the temperature of this asteroid. But in outer space, with vacuum, it wouldn't even think about evaporating. It would just go whoosh into space, and so there cannot be any water on this asteroid. And they admit that. Which is odd because this might be that division between asteroid scientists and comet scientists, because we have seen comet nuclei with temperatures above that even, and they don't blink an eye. And one of the things I pointed out is that, hey, wait, this comet nucleus is far too hot to have water on it in outer space, because conditions in outer space, it's like if you went up to a top of a mountain, water boils at a lower temperature than down at the surface of the ground, or at the base of the mountain. And the reason for that is because there's less pressure, less atmospheric pressure. But if you go out to the vacuum of space, things really go ballistic, and any kind of volatile at all would evaporate in instantly. But you had a question, James.
Yeah, I when I first heard this, what popped in my head, of course, I've been listening to you for a long time, is it's interesting. Here you have a celestial object with a tail, which you would think would be a comet. You're calling it an asteroid. But hearing you talk for a minute, you explained it. You can't have a hot comet, and you can't have a comet without water blowing the dirty snowball miles. So they're going to shift it over and call it an asteroid, and there's come up with some kind of an explanation for the tail.
Yeah, and then their standard explanation, which, for example, let's go back to Comet Holmes, which exploded into brightness a number of years ago, which actually I predicted. And I said Comet Holmes is going to have an electrical alignment, I think it was with Jupiter and Earth. And it did on that given day. Comet Holmes went and became a comet that was physically bigger than the sun, the coma. Of the gas part of the comet became bigger than the sun. It was visible in the night sky, easily visible with the naked eye, and very clearly visible with good binoculars. Our view of it looked like about the size of the full moon up in the sky, a comet. But it was way out by the orbit of Jupiter, so it was long ways away. But of course, standard astronomy said, oh, it must have got hit by an asteroid. Some little rock came along and hit it. Well, you know, okay, you might get a little trail of dust coming off something if something hit it, but not this big, perfectly symmetrical globular coma that lasts for months, literally, from a little thing hitting it. I mean, it's so absurd that you know, you don't need a PhD in astrophysics to know that that's absurd. But anyway, that's their story. But this asteroid developed six tails. So either they have to come up with the story that six asteroids hit it all at the same time from different directions, which now we're stretching the imagination quite a bit here, Mother Goose. But they were at least coy enough not to say that and said that the asteroid hitting its solution would not work here because it developed six tails. Anyway, the bottom line is this little asteroid developed six tails. There's no water for outgassing. And the real explanation is that that dust is coming into the asteroid, and that's a result of my plasma discharge comet model at work being, you know, illustrated here.
Yeah, well, okay, according to your model, then, of course, if you have an asteroid, isn't the comet, because it's got a nice circular orbit, if it were to fall out of orbit and start headed toward a sun, then it would become a comet, right? Because it would be crossing over the electrical grid lines and forming a tail and doing what comets do. I mean, a comet is only something that's moving on such a far parabolic orbit that it's crossing over these electrical potentials and thus starting sizzling.
Exactly. Discharging the solar capacitor, charging up, drawing in tail material, and then which then becomes visible as a comet. But what I've been trying to point out to people is that a comet has dozens of aspects that we can't see, dozens of properties. The electron beam coming out from the sun, sometimes that illustrates itself by the comet becoming luminescent. Like Comet Ison, for example, is green because the discharge through the comet is so intense that it lights it up like a light bulb, literally, like a neon light bulb. Except the chemicals are not neon, there are other chemicals. But for every one of these things that happens, standard science really doesn't have an explanation. And Comet Holmes was a very unusual situation many years ago, but a comet just a couple weeks ago, a comet called C2012 X1, and then Linear was the discovering agency. This comet did the same thing as Comet Holmes. It becomes gigantic overnight. Now, here's a comet that they had completely lost track of. They couldn't even see it anymore with big professional telescopes. And overnight, it explodes into brightness, becoming bigger than like Comet Holmes. I don't know the exact size, but very, very large. Certainly larger than Jupiter or any of the big planets. And so here we have another case of a comet becoming very excited. Comet Lovejoy, which passed through the solar atmosphere, is now visible, still visible in early morning sky, and in fact is naked eye visible. And then the frosting on the cake here, we have two comets, Comet Ison, which I've been talking about, and everybody is first name familiar with just about everywhere, Comet Ison, and Comet 2P Encke is another little comet that's always in the solar system. Both of them are coming up right behind little planet Mercury on the 13th and 14th of November, both of these visible in the early morning sky. And so what I've said is this gives the possibility that the planet Mercury could go comet, just like the asteroid, just like Mars did when Comet Ison passed by it 1st of October this year. Mars actually developed a coma, and it was visible by lots and lots and lots of people. It was something I predicted. Now we're waiting for Comet Ison and 2P Encke to possibly become excited themselves and excite the planet Mercury into becoming a comet, and then also causing a good deal of solar flaring from that point on for the next number of weeks while Comet Ison marches in directly towards a real close encounter with the sun. So anyway, quite a mouthful. A lot going on out there.
Now, I wanted to ask you. In fact, I was going to write you, and here you are. So I'll ask you. We've talked and mentioned. You mentioned about the sun being relatively quiet, and I'm getting emails from people talking about X-class solar flares. There's been a couple that I've noticed since the last time you've been on here. I mean, is this true, or is this some kind of misinformation?
No, we've had a couple. Now, an X-class flare, let me explain a little bit here. There's various parts of an X-class flare. Part of it is the intensity on a scale. That's where it's like a C or an M-class or an X-class flare. So it has to reach a certain intensity of X-rays, energy of X-rays. The other part is its duration. And these X-flares have been very brief, just like little pops. They have not lasted, and so the energy involved in them is very small. The end result is that, and this is what happens when you got a lot of amateurs running around the internet, jumping up and down, and trying to get attention by alarmism, and that's unfortunate. So you have a lot of that going on, but no, these flares very minimal, and in fact, end result is that the sun is extremely modest, if not minimal, behavior over the last quite a bit of time here. So, anyway,
okay. So I mean, it's X class in one technicality, but when you use the general term X class to mean a large flare, it really isn't.
Yeah, not the big booming kind that would take down our power grid or something like that. And unfortunately, the government is promoting this too because they're looking for some kind of flare. This is my opinion, to take down the power grid in a false flag event. And so that's why.
I mean, it sure looks like that. It sure looks like with the Janet Napolitano and all these other things going on, plus then you have the Obamacare failing and people actually taking regular old people getting it and getting upset and so forth. It seems that either with the bird flu swine type things, the flus on one hand, the pandemics, which are just around the corner, and the CME events and power grids are just around the corner. It seems like they're reaching out for their options to see if they have to go to something like this to stop the people from waking up.
To capture the public's attention, they need some kind of event. They've been trying to get a war going in Syria unsuccessfully. And it reminds me of that scene. There's a movie called Dances with Wolves. I'm sure almost everybody has seen it. And there's a scene in there where they're right at the beginning where they're the generals are on a hill on one side, and their troops are lined there, and then the southern Confederate troops are on the other side of this kind of an open field. And this one guy is talking to the Dances with Wolves guy while he's in the cavalry. And the guy turns around to him. He says, "Here, look, the captain's up there." He says, he's hoping something will happen, but nothing's going on. And the general is over there watching him. And nothing's going on. And so everybody's watching everybody waiting for something to happen. And that's what we got going on right now. Little Obama is sitting there trying his darndest to be president. He just signed another executive order giving him complete unadulterated power over the country because of imminent threat of weapons of mass destruction. And yeah, he just did. Holy and cow. See, this would have been going on for a year, and this executive order ends on November 14th, oddly enough. Well, they have to extend that to give him the executive power to come in and run the country as little emperor if something in the terms of terrorism happens. So he just resubmitted that executive order. And from what I understand, Congress can vote it down if they act within 30 days. But oddly enough, he had to renew it on the 14th of November when this NERC exercise is going on, the power outage exercise is going on.
Yeah, no, if I have you here for this, I was doing a little, I'm going to talk about a little about that, and I was doing some looking up things. And apparently what is being claimed by the people involved is they're not actually going to turn off any power. They're going to simulate that somehow on their end, computerized or whatever. But it has been brought up that all these, everything from 9/11 onward, even the Boston bombing, I think it was 3/11 bombing in England in the subway, all these things happened at the same time they were having a drill for the same incident. So, I mean, you could see why it's a little, you know, it's like a dog being hit with a stick, and then all of a sudden he sees a stick, he's going to cringe, you know?
Yeah, well, you got to understand, too, though, these yo-yos running this NERC corporation, they're just bozos out of the power industry. They don't know anything. They're just pawns in a bigger scheme. So I wouldn't ask them anything. I'd probably ask them what the time of day was, but I wouldn't ask them if there was going to be some kind of a power outage or terrorist mock event or planned false flag event, because they're not going to know.
Yeah,
they're not savvy to any. They're just a bunch of old guys in old suits these guys have come out of the power industry. So don't look to them for any kind of questions or answers. Their pat answer, they're just another cog in the wheel. What they think is they're putting on a power grid outage exercise. And I always wondered, where do these people get off doing this? I mean, why shouldn't I be able to run an international power outage exercise? Where exactly does this come from? Obviously, these guys aren't doing anything. They're just a clog in a wheel. Someone above someplace is setting this up.
Right.
As with 9/11, the majority of players didn't know they were playing in a real-life drama.
Right. The people who were actually doing the NATO testing were surprised. I mean, they were all shocked when it was real true. They thought it was that was part of their test. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, wait a minute, it's really happening? I mean, just think, what are the odds of that happening? And people could say, well, it's because Bin Laden's extensive spy network found out about it and coordinated it to go along with it. And, excuse me, I don't know, I think Santa Claus is a little more believable than that to actually transpire.
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, then all of the things that had to go along with it, the explosives in the buildings and Building 7 coming down, even though it never got hit by an airplane, wasn't anywhere near it, you know. No other buildings came down. this whole NERC operation, and I often wondered, like, where did this outfit come from? Where do they get their money from? Who's above them? Who's on the above the board of trustees pulling strings? You know, you don't see that. This is not visible. I wouldn't ask the guys that are on the board of trustees or the executives or other staff of NERC, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. I wouldn't ask them anything but maybe the time of day.
Yeah, so I understand that, you know, when they answer, they're going to go, well, no, we're just doing this test. That, you know, they're answering honestly. They're doing the test. But when you have this history of these events happening, you have to take notice. And what I've done, I worked out today. I made sure I have extra fuel for my generator, and I tested it. In fact, I was working in the studio today getting ready for the show tonight, and I was powering off my generator, and all the voltage levels were fine and everything. And so just in case, I'm ready for something. Of course, I only have limited fuel. I've bought a bunch of it, but still, there's only a certain amount of time that can happen that they can use this. But at least they'll be better prepared than people who aren't.
Right, exactly. So anyway, but the association of this power outage simulation is that it just happens to be on the 2 days when Comet Ison has an electrical linear alignment with the planet Mercury. And so, once again, in planning events, these are somewhat strange coincidences, let's put it that way, because to do a real full-scale power outage, they would be looking for a solar flare, something to point to that, that was an act of God. And the people in Tier 1 science who fully are aware of that my work is correct, and that my prediction of the 13th and 14th of November would be a period in which solar flaring would increase greatly. And if they're looking for this flare, then they have the two sides of it. They have standard science saying, oh, no, comets don't affect the sun, not at all. And then the setting this NERC operation on the 13th and 14th, and then Janet Napolitano saying, we are imminently, imminent probability or whatever her words were, that we're going to have a power outage due to solar flaring, like an EMP. Plus, not only that, but a cyber attack. Well, if they're in charge of Homeland Security, aren't they supposed to be out there stopping it? With all their resources, instead of listening in to you and me, they better be listening in on the terrorists and and finding out who they are, you know?
Yeah, it is funny that they're going to talk about preventing a cyber attack when the whole Obamacare website issue comes up where, you know, it's not functional. I mean, one might say it was intentional. I don't. I happen to think that they're just incompetent. But I think if I had a guess that... they've been working on some kind of a flu pandemic for a while, and working on that narrative, and they've been working on the power outage narrative, that these are their go-to things. But on the same breath, they need the universe to cooperate. In other words, they need to have some kind of flu show up that they can blow it out of proportion. They need some kind of flaring that they can blow out of proportion, but so far, neither are cooperating.
Right. The sun by itself... And that's where we get back to this concept of people jumping up and down like the sky is falling when we get a couple of X-class flares. And the reality is that there wasn't any energy in any of those to cause any effects on Earth, let alone a power outage.
Do you have any comments on this super typhoon that hit? They're talking at least 10,000 dead. I mean, is this something that looks suspicious, or is it just, they do happen. Bad ones do happen, but I was just curious if you had any comments on that.
No, I don't. I don't have any comments on it. Normally, I might on weather issues, but I don't have any information that it may have been manipulated, and I wouldn't even imagine why anybody would manipulate a storm like that. My guess is that it's simply a natural occurring storm. When we look at, for example, the way energy travels, especially electrical energy that would power a storm like that, it finds a vein, so to speak, an avenue, a path, and it follows it, and they tend to follow a single path, so all the energy goes in that spot. And so it's not, in fact, we had some typhoons back in the 90s that I believe had higher wind speeds than this one. It's just they didn't hit that populated area. This one apparently just hit very high population areas. Mm-hmm.
A lot of the housing in there would be substandard by some building. So when things do happen there, there's less that can be done about it, and more damage can happen because they're not built to withstand these type of storms. Now, I mean, I don't know if anything can withstand it. At some point, it doesn't matter, but you do have a lot of people crowded together living in unpleasant conditions in a lot of these parts where it's hit.
In fact, my experience is they underreport the death tolls. And so given the populations of those areas, I would be surprised if it was only 10,000. And in a lot of those areas, you can't even get in there with any kind of vehicle, let alone helicopter or other, to really get on the ground to find out what's going on. So where they get these estimates from, I really don't know. I don't believe them. I believe that the death toll would be much higher, just like Hurricane Andrew. All of the hurricanes in the United States, Katrina, We knew that they were vastly underreporting death tolls and other types of damage, you know, to destruction of housing, etc.
Well, all right. Well, I mean, I guess it's one of these you have to just kind of watch and wait. I will be looking in the sky. I have been driving pre-dawn and being able to watch the sunrise. In fact, I had to do it one time because people were sending me pictures of the two suns, you know, the Planet X thing. And I'm maintaining that. I'm trying to explain that if you had two suns that were in the sky like that, it'd be seen by everybody on the planet every single day. I mean, or at least if it was a rotating thing, there would be it would last for many, many days. And says, well, tomorrow I'm going to go look in the sky and look for the second sun. Of course, there wasn't there, but it's one of the things I was going to talk about. Well, actually, I'm airing this after I talked about it, I guess, so, is about how we have to use logic in the science in a mechanical sense to think about these things. So we just can't see a lens flare and say, well, there's proof it's Planet X. I go, wait a minute, you're sending me in three different pictures. They're all same time, all different places. It can't happen. So that's, I guess that's a comment on the education system. That
I get pictures all the time, and some I look at, you know, because you want to be open and I hope that someone is sending you something, but I just get constantly Photoshop photos, and then people change their story. You say, well, this couldn't be because of this. Oh, well, but that was because of that. Then they change their story, and it's just like, no, you know, there's so much Looney Tunism out there that unfortunately, plus then people get caught up in this. Oh, there's two Planet X's. Did you see that? And it's like, no.
I will say, though, what they were saying things about, we're going to go through Comet Ison's tail. And I asked you last time around specifically that. And since you said not even close, that data has dropped off. You know, so it's like they can't say that anymore because it's been dealt with. Now, I mean, I'm not even saying they put it there maliciously. They just might have, somebody said it and they believed it and boom, passed it along. So that's why I do bring this stuff up.
A lot of this, James, starts from actually a few sources. And it gets passed around. There's email lists. There's, you know, and it's coming from sources that every comet is Planet X. Every, thing that happens, oh, that's proof of Planet X. And it just, you know, there's some nutcases out there and people with to think that this is they're ordained from God to get the word out, whatever that means. And so no matter what it is, oh, it's Planet X. And so they're psychologically disturbed people.
Well, it's good. To see this because they give examples, and we may do the same thing and something all completely unrelated to the topic. The human tendency may be to simply continue one's own paradigm even when evidence to the contrary. So, I mean, I guess in a way I try to look at things and say, okay, what am I doing in my own world, in my own way that is similar in concept? So there is, a positive to it all, if you can think of that.
Well, I just put a posting on my webpage stating that academia is hunkered down, basically, in a great deal of denial. If you look like, for example, a topic like plate tectonics, it doesn't work. Yet geology, people are teaching this all the way to the PhD level in grade school and high school and, other concepts about astronomy. I mean, they can't tell you enough that comets are dirty snowball. Human evolution, you know, that man ascended from some tribe in the Mideast 7,000 years ago, and somehow we have all the races of man in Africa and the little ones that developed in South America, the Mayans and the little, you know, 4-foot-tall people there with, you know, and all this happened in 7,000 years. It was like, whoa, put the brakes on. This is just, I mean, it's not even possible, yet they teach this. So all I'm saying is that our lives are filled with things that simply could not possibly be true. So for people to come out and start, you know, taking pictures or whatever they do, Photoshop them or whatever they do, internal reflections in cameras, and, oh, there's two suns there, you know. It's just, what are people thinking? But we live in a scientifically very obtuse, backwards, outdated, you know, Middle Ages society, unfortunately. And the internet gives these people a venue, internet or email lists, where they can hire an email company and send to hundreds of thousands of people. So it's just unfortunate.
Well, that's what we have to, we have to question everything. We have questions, our self-examination. I mean, Socrates is one of my favorite people, and he said the unexamined life is not worth living. Whenever someone comes up with things, they have a belief. And that's why I don't like when people say, well, I believe this. I go, I want to say, I don't, but I want to say, like, I don't care what you believe. I want to know how you came to your acceptance of this statement you're going to say. Why do you believe it? In other words, there has to be some kind of mental process, mental emotional process, intuitive, along with the evidence to get to a certain point. And that's kind of what I do in this show, is I'm open to anything, but I need, it's like when you took a test in school for math. If you just, it's complex math, you just turned in your paper with the correct answers. It doesn't matter. You had the point is, how did you get them? We're working on technique here of being able to problem solve, to troubleshoot, to look for contradictions. And so when someone presents an end result, I'm interested in how you got there before I even consider the ramifications of what you're coming up with.
Right. Or conversely, people will say, well, I don't believe that. Based on what?
Yeah, right.
Because you never heard it before? Because you didn't learn it in grade school? Based on exactly what?
It's a feel world. They want you to feel the answer, and they do that because you can make someone feel it without having it be factual. And, of course, being all logic and being all science is bad, too, because look what we just talked about, dirty snowballs, etc. That's the science model. And so if you were going to be a scientist, you'd have to follow that model. Well, I want to question that model, and I'm going to keep questioning it, just like we've done for thousands of years to get where we're at. Keep on questioning, look at what the data says, and accept what it tells you.
Yeah. But, unfortunately, money and entrenched concepts rule. This posting on my webpage, I said that most university professors are hunkered down in their little ivory tower and are teaching completely incorrect information, but they're going to continue to do it. And hoping that they can get to retirement before anybody finds out.
Yeah, that's kind of sad.
About the size of it.
That's kind of sad,
They're not going to tell anybody.
Well, while you're here, as we're closing here, do you want to say anything about this DVD, about being on Japan's, quote, 60 Minutes? That sounds pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. That's my latest release. Is about a year ago, I was contacted, and the producer of a television show in Japan that's essentially their 60 Minutes program. The format is exactly the same. They have an hour program, three 20-minute segments each, and they cover three different topics, giving 20 minutes each. And it's the most watched television show in Japan. And I said, oh, well, that must be a lot of people watch it. And they said, no, everybody in Japan watch this show. Everybody. And in Japan, they have a culture that's kind of like that. It's like everybody watches this show. So they wanted to interview me on the topic of Planet X. And I asked them where they got my name. And they had conducted their own research and came up with my name. So they flew over here to the United States, came to me where I was, and their main producer, this was something of an honor, the woman who organized this, she said, very rare that the main producer himself came to interview me. And so he wanted to personally interview me. And so they came, and we set up actually in my loft studio and conducted the interview. And at the time, I thought, well, I'll turn on my camera. I'm in my studio. So I had my high-definition DVD camera there, and I turned it on. So I filmed the entire interview, 3.5 hours. Actually, it was over 4 hours total. And so I cut out some dead air and some time when everybody had to get up and take a break. But basically, that's over 3 hours of uncut video of this interview. And so I thought, why not put it out? Let's see people see what the Japanese want to know about Planet X. And so that's my new release. It's a DVD. It's now available on my webpage. I believe you have a link to my webpage from your page.
Yeah.
Now yeah.
What I found also interesting is that now that I hear that it's the raw footage, did you have a chance to see the final airing and what they chose to keep versus what they chose not to keep?
Well, it was in, to answer the question, it was in Japanese. They had a voice over me in Japanese. That's, and so it wasn't like I really knew what they did.
That's a good
or
point.
Or how they cut it or what information they gave.
I would imagine there's people listening to you who, and anybody listening here, I would welcome to find out who understands Japanese or even are in Japan. To be able to kind of answer this, I wanted to know if they twisted it at all, or if it was they took information and what they took and all that. So if there's anybody listening who could answer that, I would love to hear. Because
It already aired over there.
Because
I know people that saw it.
Okay, and they didn't say that they twisted anything, right?
But I didn't, I wouldn't call it an analysis that I'd want to hear. I would want to hear every word translated, but of course, Japanese and how they present concepts and things is very different than ourselves. So,
I was in a news story that was covered by Chicago Station's appearance I made. I cut my hair for charity, and the one who actually got to the air, who covered it, was the Spanish station. And they aired it. And it was interesting when they translated what I said. I mean, they didn't say anything I didn't say. But it was like, well, I didn't actually say it that way. It was kind of just interesting. And, of course, that's not very non-technical. So it is kind of interesting how things do get translated to fit the time frames and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I think people would find it interesting. Here's the thing. The Japanese don't have NASA. They don't get the standard science pounded down their throat like we get here, where every article comes out of the newspaper or whatever. It's from NASA top down, and it's all sanctioned, and it says dirty snowball or whatever it is, it's sanctioned. It's the sanctioned, homogenized, pasteurized information that comes out of the standard science industry. In Japan, you don't have that. You don't have that. You don't have a preconceived notion of what Planet X is. You didn't have the crazy lady talks to aliens thing going on, or all of the nutcase misinformation, disinfo crew. You don't have any of that in Japan, so it was a fresh view. Mm-hmm. And to have the entire country of Japan looking at this, I thought was interesting. So,
That's great to hear. There is a general belief by some people, and there is some evidence to back it up, that there is an awakening worldwide. A lot of people are are waking up to the tyranny by the current regime here in the United States. You had, just off the top of my head, you had an actual mainstream documentary made by a famous director in Italy using the famed TV and movie actors in Italy about 9/11. Mainstream on TV. Great points they brought up. It's one of my favorite documentaries on it. It's called Zero. I highly recommend it for to give to someone who's never really approached it. And this is on mainstream TV. You don't see that. You don't even see that here. You can't even mention any kind of conspiracy with 9/11. without getting laughed off the, you know, whatever. I mean, they laughed Ron Paul off the stage, who talked sound financial advice because it wasn't mainstream, let alone a 9/11. So there is this outside the United States, there is a different approach to it, and I applaud all those taking this approach to look for evidence, look at evidence for itself and not following some kind of a paradigm model.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing that's just a little aside note, my work on the direct calculation of prime numbers, you know, resolving the basically 2,500-year-old math problem, one of the most important in math problems in history. And I resolved that. It gets more attention in, like, Europe, for example, and other places in the world than the United States. But because in the United States, here's the problem. University professors see that, and then they see, oh, but he also is talking about this comet stuff. And across campus here, my buddies in the astronomy department really have this thing for McCanny, so I better not say anything positive about his calculate primes work, because I'd get in deep trouble. This is the professor in mathematics thinking to himself. So better just not mention that. So it's a strange kind of consortium of, like I said in my posting today, the professors have their head in the sand, and really they can't, they don't want to cross any of these fields. They have this, don't cross my field line and I won't cross your line. Nobody wants to upset the apple cart, because giving credit to me for solving that math problem would then open up visibility of my other work.
You know, that's the funny part about it, is that you think you would, the people would be unrelated, but there is, when it, especially here, you have this overreaching money thing that runs everything. So,
right.
But again, I think we're in a, if I can come up with a generality of, we're in an environment where there is a benign positive push that's driving things forward, so that the absurd become more absurd and more absurd until people go, wait a minute. And the things that are hidden are becoming out into the light, and there's enough of them happening so people can't just say it was an isolated incident. So there's some kind of a push to bring things forward, and I'm that's the, maybe it's a metaphysical push, maybe it's the timing, maybe it's God, I don't know, but and what's happening is people are going to have to, either they're going to have to work real hard to stay asleep, and eventually they won't be able to, or they will start waking up and start to go, wait a minute, if this is the case, then what about this? And I went on the record a while back saying Obamacare would, might be that catalyst that will bring everybody out, and regardless of what political party, what color they are, what religion, because everyone's getting hammered by it so badly that this will be maybe the thing that will bring people together in realizing things. It might have, that might be effect, you know.
The whole country is shut down. Nothing is moving. Nobody's hiring. The whole country is at a standstill. Everybody's sitting there looking at each other, waiting for the next shoe to drop. And the country is, it was already in bad shape, but it's just, you know, there's nothing happening, and everybody's nobody can move because of this quagmire of Obamacare.
Yeah, I can tell from the industry that I'm in, as far as moving a product, that it is a slowdown. It's definitely slow. It's a slow even from things coming in from China. Everything's slowing down. So I don't know. It's like, almost like the darkest before the dawn. It's like the quiet before the events, and that's probably why.
Well, that's why they. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I'm probably going to say the same thing. That's probably why they're coming up with the ISON and all this other stuff to fill in that expectation, rather than people see what really goes on.
Well, they need an event to solidify their side and get people back focused on them. And see, the power outage, you know, coupled with some terrorism, puts Obama up, and just like George Bush Jr. was at the very beginning of his term, and he was already viewed as a complete moron. Congress was voting down defense appropriations left and right. They said, we don't need this anymore. We're not in a war. We don't have anything. 9-1-1 happened, and all of a sudden George Bush was a genius, was the greatest president in history, and had to run and operate Congress was voting 100-0 all the appropriation bills that they had.
I found it funny how Bush went from being a moron to a genius architect of the New World Order. People started saying that his plan, of course it's the people behind him actually doing all of that, but it's kind of funny to see the funny in the sense of
funny.
Yeah, not humorous, but to see his metamorphosis from being kind of bumbling idiot to master of the world, so to speak. So, and now now you have Obama, who's has to face the music. I mean, I was being told of an interview that they had on mainstream TV where people were standing up, both of all races and the denominations. People who voted for him are standing up and calling him a liar and whatnot, and it's live on TV. It's like, whoa. I mean, it's almost like the powers that be have got what they could out of Obama, and now they're going to throw him out to the wolves and bring in the next guy who is going to save us from Obama. So it's almost, it seems like that would be the World Wrestling Federation way of looking at it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. So all I can tell people is batten down the hatches and get ready, because this next month, and then Obama, not the least of which, a couple days ago says November, he declares November National Infrastructure Preparedness Month. And I'm like, where did this come from? You know, sure, we got to be prepared and stuff, but what's the impetus for this? Why November? Why now? Why not December?
Yeah, or why not in June when it's warm out?
Yeah.
Then we can worry about these things. Not like, hey, when something goes wrong, people are going to freeze, you know? That's what I say about the North.
We don't have any reason to do this now any more than last month or the month after.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I mentioned the people in the South in America, in the wintertime, they're complaining and amazed when it gets to be 20, overnight. And they're like, wow, that's unbelievable. And I said, when you go up to the North, it's like 20 for days. It goes down to zero for days. I mean, people die.
You go out to get a suntan when it gets to 20 sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, people, if there was an energy shut off during that time, you would have, talk about mass extinction event. Talk about the weapons of mass destruction. All you had to do was shut off the electricity in the North for an extended amount of time. And, you're talking mass death.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I've been an advocate for people getting together generators and methods to charge batteries and whatnot to try and get through any type of a crisis. Because even if it did happen for a while, eventually somebody would step in along the way at some point, and you want to try and stay alive long enough. I mean, I'm not saying this to be fair. It just makes sense. I mean, if this was 30 years ago, it would still be something you should do. You should have food, water filters. I mean, I know I'm preaching to the choir when it comes to you, but you should be able to be able to survive in some type of event. I mean, it could be a natural event that happens. It not necessarily has to be something devious or in dark conspiracy.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's the problem is nobody can plan. Nobody can do anything. Nothing's going on. And none of this is necessary. We should be living in a world that is beaming with success. We're being led by idiots who just all they can do is destroy.
Well, that's what you deal with in the Diamond Principle and your water book and whatnot, is that these are all the tools being used. And again, if I can wish anything forward as far as energy, it's that people will wake up to these things, and we can actually thank a lot of these knuckleheads running things for some of the dumb things they do actually are bringing people forward. And for those books and whatnot, I have links to your website. You have them right there. People can get them. The DVD sounds fascinating. I'm glad that was out in Japan. And again, I reiterate, anybody who has access to and understands the TV, I'd love to get some input on what they actually put out there. What was the actual message? You know, what was the point of the 20-minute edited? Well, I appreciate the time that you spent to come around and give us updates, again, right from the horse's mouth, so that we don't have to rely on innuendo and editing and email lists and so forth.
Thank you, James.
All right, we'll talk again.
Thanks. Take care.